I saw this guy at, we went to Harwood Motors down the street. Mm-hmm. Some dude had a shirt that was just black with white block text that said, "I work hard so my Corvette can have a better life." I was like, I need that.
It's very true.
Hey, welcome back to Switchcast Live. We are a little bit late. Apologies, but it's been about a month since we've done a live show. So I am like a Ford truck in the Middle East, Midwest, oh. Not the Middle East, in the Midwest. Rusty.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah, you can tell my jokes are rusty.
Middle East would be like a 50 cal mounted on it.
Right. Okay. Also extremely valuable.
Yeah. Yes. Because Ford.
And rust free. Anyway, welcome back. My screen just went black. Welcome back, everybody. This is our special post open house episode. We have Tyler Sanders in house and John Dunlap from Minerva Motor Club and a larger live audience. And we're going to do a Q&A episode. We have a lot of preloaded news items and fun things to discuss, but send your questions in, preferably with dinero in any currency. And maybe not Robert. Bitcoin, because I don't know how to like cash that out. But we're old school here. We drive internal combustion vehicles and don't believe in Carvana.
Someone will be able to help us.
Speaking
honestly,
of...
honestly, if somebody sends one Bitcoin, we only want one.
Yeah, one
would
cool.
be okay.
Yes, it's better than one super chat or one star. One star on TikTok is like a quarter of a 13th of a cent.
Mm.
Anyway, speaking of internal combustion vehicles, we had an open house here. We had about, I don't know, 150 cars. And I've already offended someone today. The podcast hasn't even started. I walked out to check on things, and there was a Tesla parked up front. And half joking, I'm always half joking. I was like, why is a Tesla here? Who parked a Tesla out front? Like, getting after my guys who were like, you know, good cars go up front and, you know, the pedestrian traffic goes out back. I was like mostly joking, like, right?
Yeah.
And I took a phone call and then turned around. The two guys in the Tesla just got in and left.
But you didn't hear them leave.
No, I did not hear them leave. But we may get a negative review later for the owner of Switch Cars hates Teslas.
True.
Maybe.
Just maybe don't park it out front. I don't know. That takes a lot of
well, my
gusto.
Team put him out there.
Oh.
I was just was like joking around because it's not a car show. And
it was ludicrous.
I mean, it is a car show. It's not a car show car. Tesla's a Tesla. It is traffic. It's a BMW 3 Series at this point. So
plus, if it was a car show, I would have been parked up front for sure. 100%.
Why would you be parked up front, Tyler?
You had to bring everybody all the way in.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody was following.
Set the pace.
So Tyler bought a car.
I did. I have purchased a 98 Corvette pace car.
Yes!
And it is wonderful.
I thought you were going to say one of one.
It is extremely rare, Doug. I don't know if you know how rare this Corvette pace car
is.
It's
incredible.
You should tell Hank later how rare it is. He has some questions about this.
Oh, does he know? All right.
He's going to find out.
Oh, I'm so excited.
His niece told him on a TikTok.
I have posted
it
on the internet.
Do we all own C5s here at this table then?
This is the C5 podcast.
Okay.
Are you coming to the thing?
The question is, are you, the viewer, coming to the thing? The Corvette Caravan at the National Corvette Museum, August 28th through September 1st, I think. It's going to be awesome. Just go. I'm not going to tell you about it. Just go on the NCM website and come down for the Corvette Caravan. There's going to be like 7,000 to 8,000 one of one Corvettes.
It's
there.
Crazy. It is. Yeah. It is really crazy. And they only do it every 5 years. It's something to see.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Boomer boards galore. Mustache mania.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be so good. So much denim.
Speaking of events, well, we'll get there in a circuitous route. There is a new old Cannonball record recently discovered. They're all out there among certain nerdy circles that follow certain types of cars and stuff, but we don't know about every transcontinental record. Well, thanks to Mason Dibley, who is one of the guys who has been researching these records, he sent me one the other day, and it is a 1929 Ford Model A Roadster. And two gentlemen with the last names Hargis and Creighton set this record in 1930. It is one that had never been done before. They crossed the country from New York to California and back in 42 days.
All right.
In period.
Yeah, well, yeah, 1930.
Yeah. Yeah.
But seems slow, right?
No.
Yes.
No,
the record in like 1904 was like 42 days. The record was down to like a couple days. Okay, but it was like it was measured in hours in the 1930s.
True.
Cannonball Baker went in 1933 in 53 and a half hours.
Gotcha.
Took them 42 days. You know why? You don't know why.
I mean, I think I know why, but I won't tell. I won't ruin it.
This is so well scripted.
I'm so sorry.
It's because they removed all of the forward gears on the car, fitted headlights to the trunk, and they drove the entire trip in reverse.
What?
All the way across the country and back.
That's wild.
The car was never shut off, even during their 48-hour like stay overnight. Over two nights in L.A. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be crazy. The picture was crazy of them hanging out the back, looking out the back with the headlights on the rear trunk.
Yes.
That's nuts.
Yes. And if you'd like to see a visual representation of all of Transcontinental and Cannonball record history, you can do so on September 14th in Minerva, Ohio. You can register at carsarestars.com. And cars like that, but also cars that have set the record all the way back to 1903 and all the way up to present are going to be there. So you can literally walk the line and see 50 days to 25 and a half hours, and it'll only take you a couple minutes to walk the line, but that was over 120 years that progression happened. We are still looking for 1929 Model A Roadster to represent this particular record, so if you have one, you want it featured, that'd be great. We will also have celebrities like Arnie Toman, Ed Bolian, and Alex Roy confirmed today that he's coming. Still working on some others and still working on some very special cars, but it is an event not to be missed. And John is one of the original creators of the Cars Are Stars event.
Yeah, it's a truly special, awesome event. It's a spectacle of everything to see. You should definitely come check it out. And the other cool thing is it's 100% for charity. It's just everything goes towards the Roxy, which is an old-timey movie theater in a cute little quaint small town called Minerva, Ohio. Most people drive through Minerva, not to Minerva. But when you do stop, it looks like the big city lawyer is about to fall in love with the small town baker. It looks like every Hallmark movie ever.
You already used that line in a promotional video, John. Get some new material.
It hasn't been released yet.
Do you reuse your lines, John?
I am autopilot when talking about Minerva at this point.
Good golly, we don't reuse any lines here.
No.
Or content.
And we don't rehearse anything? Well, that one might actually be true.
Speaking of, Carvana. No.
Yeah.
I knew, Doug, I felt something was missing over the past month of my life, and I think it's because I wasn't checking in on their Carvana stock price every week when you brought
the
it up.
The earnings report, quarter two earnings report, came out today.
Oh, what? Seriously?
They came out today at 5:30 p.m., so I've not had time to dig into them, but they did report a $48 million net profit, which people said was surprising. Sad that a business that big after 13 years is surprisingly making money. 11 years, whatever it is.
All the years.
We're all about accuracy here. I did not look into it heavily. We had a big open house here. But the numbers look fairly legit.
I mean,
big numbers that are like, wait, what's that?
Yeah, little I was thing like, there. Okay, where's the big 800 number or whatever it was last time that just conveniently made things look really rosy?
So it's even about if you look the at the same graph net profit as last year. Quarter. But I mean, at the same time, though, like they sold 101,000 cars.
Holy crap!
That's not a lot of net profit for 48 million for 101,000 cars. Their administrative costs per unit are nearly $4,000, which is a significant reduction from a couple of years ago where it was almost $6,000, but that's still a lot. Like to pay $4,000 per unit in administrative overhead plus your giant $150 million per quarter interest payments, they still got a long way to go, but whatever. Their stock price is up today. So
just like their elevators.
The amount of C5 Corvette pace cars I could have purchased if I would have invested my life savings in Carvana back when we first started talking about it is insane.
It's for sure more than one.
Facts. At least two. Maybe three.
All right, we're going to try to be super technological here and play a video from Facebook and make sure this is working. Our producer is going to put his headphones on, and we're going to go for this.
People are now passing around on the right to get around him. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4 cars stacking up. You see one car just had to get all the way around and get in front of him. So clearly, he is impeding the flow of traffic here. So I stopped you because you were driving in the left lane. I know, I realize you're from Texas, but you can't drive in the left lane and impede the flow of traffic. You had about 4 or 5 cars stacked behind you.
Yeah, I was going the speed limit, so I was...
So it's not about going the speed limit, it's about left lane is for passing. And there was plenty of people that were passing around you.
So I was trying to get over so I could let them go.
Yeah, yeah, I was following you for a while. You'd been in the left lane for a little bit. Any weapons in the car?
No.
You should, it's dangerous out there. I know he said he tried to move over, but no. He gave the same argument most people give, which is, well, I was going the speed limit. And that's not what this is about. It's not about going the speed limit. It is about the left lane is for passing.
All right, so that video was from a sheriff in Texas. And you guys didn't hear this, but if you were listening to the podcast, you heard it. He said multiple times, so this was an unmarked car, and he was he had a camera along for the ride, and he was enforcing people blocking the left lane, which I love. I am all about this. But he said multiple times, both to the camera and to the person that he pulled over and ticketed, he said, it is not about the speed limit. It is about the left lane is for passing. Because, of course, the left lane hogger's defense was, I was going the speed limit. So, like, you infer, I have a right to be there. And I'm like, okay, as much as I'm a, you know, perpetual alleged speeder and protest people blocking the left lane, I've started to empathize with them, right? So there's this always this, you know, division between people, and this is animosity between the speeders and the left lane parkers. And the left lane people go, well, I'm going the speed limit, you shouldn't need to speed. And the left lane people go, well, you're in the left lane, everybody's speeding, get out of the way. And the problem is this duplicitous, like this double standard of enforcement where this cop says, well, it's not about the speed limit. Well, but if that guy was going 15 over in the left lane, they give him a ticket for going over the speed limit. So it is about the speed limit, so but it's not
double dipping.
So I'm like, if it's not about the speed limit, stop writing speeding tickets. One or the other. Like, if you're going to say that you need to get out of the left lane, then stop enforcing speed limits in the left lane. Because you're creating this animosity between the self-righteous left lane people and the self-righteous I'm passing and going above the speed limit.
Yes,
and both people are right and wrong at the same time, because you can give them both a ticket.
But the difference is that the people that are camping in the left lane can be just as happy and just as right to the right.
And speeding could be just as safe or safer going the speed limit.
Well, they, yeah,
you don't need to go any faster.
But it's an opportunity. It's the apple. You know what I mean?
I get it. All I'm saying is I don't agree with left lane camping. I'm just saying that they're never going to solve this problem while they have this two-sided enforcement. They're never going to. It's just going to make people angry, and everybody's going to be angry at each other.
I'll continue to be angry with them.
Me too. Well, because I think
they're just not in the left lane.
It creates a lot more of a dangerous environment to be camping in the left lane, because then people are swerving and cutting lanes and
absolutely
doing whatever. That is more likely, in my opinion, to cause an accident. Maybe science too, but I don't have the science to back it up at the moment, than somebody going 20 over in the left lane. If you stay out of their way, they don't have to make last-minute adjustments.
Okay, but the flip side of that, I tell my child that if he's interacting with an impossible person, he's responsible for his response to the situation. Doesn't matter what they're doing. So if people are swerving and cutting people off in order to get around the campers in the left lane, that's not the left lane camper's problem. That's the people's problem that are in a hurry. It's an improper response.
I guess. The problem is I agree with a lot of that, so it's troubling to argue with, but also just get out of the way. Like, you have three other lanes, two of which are much more suited to your speed of travel. Please exit.
There's a song about this, you know.
Is there?
Move! Get out the way! Get out the way! Anyway.
And Switchcast is brought to you by Boxcast. Boxcast is a live streaming company based in Cleveland, Ohio, and they serve broadcasters and viewers around the world. Their founders launched Boxcast back in 2013 with one purpose: to make people a part of the experience. So if you're looking to live stream your podcast, church service, car show, sporting event, wedding, or even your cannonball attempt, Boxcast is an easy and flexible live streaming platform for organizations. Boxcast is so easy, in fact, that we're broadcasting this show with a phone. So head on over to switchcars.com/Boxcast to start your free trial.
Check, check. Mic check. You got me in here?
He's back.
Hank is here.
Good.
What's up, Hank?
Hi, Tyler.
It has been it's been a while. How have you been?
This guy has a Corvette shirt on. Do you own a Corvette?
I do.
It's, what kind?
A very rare one. It's one of one.
I don't
one.
Know about that.
Yeah.
Did you get a letter from the museum confirming that it's one of one?
For sure. Yes. It is signed by Tad Schuchter that it's one of one.
Okay.
And Kirk Benyon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Those are definitely names of people that, for sure, I should get to know them.
You know
Hank,
them.
I have purchased a vehicle.
Yep. Seems about right. You seem like a rich kid.
Well, I've sold the one of the cars I had previously, so it's not like this money came from nowhere. I have purchased a 1998 Corvette Pace car.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, did you see it out in the parking lot?
Nope. I just got here a little bit ago.
Okay. Well,
there
it's
was
really
no
hard
trophies at that open house they were doing, so I didn't bring my Corvette out. Also, it's raining.
Is it? I did have to put the top up just in case.
It's raining in Indiana, so that's enough for most Corvette people to stay
home.
Oh,
yeah, it's close enough. Yeah, I gotcha. So, yeah, how do you know, I've
Indiana is west of here, and weather moves from west to east.
Yep. Yes.
But, Hank, I got to tell you, you might have been onto something. This car is pretty great. I have had a fantastic time once I replaced the 20-year-old tires that were on it.
Oh, were they original tires?
Almost. They were from 2002, not quite original. Mm. They were old. They were full of cracks. All the fluids are really old. I need to get all that stuff
You shouldn't
replaced.
Replace original tires, though. That's how you know it's original mileage.
But wouldn't it be dangerous to drive? I'm trying to enjoy the car.
Well, you shouldn't drive it much more than the speed limit anyway.
Well, it's
Where
very,
are you going?
Hey, you should know it's very hard to keep a Corvette under the speed limit. There's a lot of torque happening there. That American,
I don't have any problem with that.
Oh, you don't?
Nope.
He's also in the left
so
lane
So how many
a lot.
Miles are on it?
33,000.
33,000. So were the original tires worn out?
They were replaced in 2002, so they must have been. I don't. It had a lot of mileage in the first like 5 years of its life, and then it just kind of sat.
Mm. But it's how many owners on it?
I am the fourth, I think.
Ugh.
What? It's fine. It's mostly sat.
It's a lot of owners. I bought my car new. I took museum delivery. How many trophies has the car won previously?
None that I know of, but Hank, it's purple. And it has a flag on
that
it.
That suits you. You well, would okay. buy a car
Why does
that's
that
a woman's
suit me?
Color.
With yellow accents.
I can't even be offended by it. The car's beautiful.
It's so good.
It's so
do
good.
Do you go to a salon to get your hair done?
I actually kind of do.
Yep. I think we all know the figures. Answer is yes to that. Look at those luscious
locks. Who does the previous owner of your Corvette vote for?
I do not know. But actually,
you so know the, anything about the previous owner? That's important when you're buying a Corvette.
Hank, I got to tell you, Doug helped me get this. There was almost no history with this car. But I've driven it like 300 miles since I got it, and it's been great.
Okay.
This week?
Not this week. It's been in like a. I've had it for like a month.
You get those.
You really
up.
Should interview the previous owner, you know.
So this previous owner, John, I don't know if you know. It came from this place called Fantasy Farms in Florida. It's this like event space with that's got animals and stuff and a bunch of cars in a garage. So this just sat in a garage in Florida for a few
that
years.
That sounds. You should probably check those seats with the black light.
Nah, I know. I don't want to. I don't want to know.
Ignorance is bliss for that. Also,
exactly.
I think for there you need a stage name.
Well, how many of them did they make? Is it more rare than my C5?
They made around 1,100 98 pace cars. Yeah, but hang back.
They only made 347 of the light carmine red in 1998 my C5. So,
oh, his car actually is more rare.
It is.
Because they made like 520 manual 98 pace cars. So, dang it. Well, I got to get another one. I can't possibly.
How rare is your Corvette over here, poser shirt?
I mean, at Kirk Benyon, who's the chief designer.
Do you
for
race
Corvette.
For Corvette racing, or do you just buy the shirt?
I used to race Corvettes, but no, not for Corvette racing. No, sadly.
Yeah, I heard they only give those shirts out to the race car drivers.
Yeah, I had to beat somebody up for it, but it was okay. They were smaller than me.
I don't know about this guy.
Yeah, we might not invite it back next time. That's all right.
That's okay.
So, Hank, I'm really excited to show you my car. We'll have to we'll go outside after another one. You might be gone by the time the podcast is up. But it's I'm living the Corvette life. It's a good time.
Well,
it's
so good.
Congratulations, I think.
Well, we'll just have to wait till you see it. I want you to get your eyeballs on it and really appreciate it. But okay. Thanks for coming down again.
Well, I judged the C5 class for the NCRS, so I'll give it a good look over.
Please do. I want your discerning eye.
He's
all
got
over
the black
my
light, too.
No. Yeah. We can put the black light away. That's fine. That's fine.
Great.
All
right. Good night.
Thank you, Hank, for coming down. That was the Corvette Curmudgeon, everybody. Brought to you unwittingly by the Corvette Buy Sell Trade Group on Facebook. That is your source for cranky boomers, overpriced Corvettes, and reinforced stereotypes. How's it going, Doug?
Great.
Hey, you're back. You just missed Hank.
Ah, yeah. I wouldn't say I missed him.
he's in quite a tizzy. He's fired up tonight. I don't know what's going on. I think it's the new people. He just gets a little skittish with new people.
I think he did see the purple, and I think he's confused about his feelings about it. That's what I think.
Because I think the theory, everybody does love that car. They just don't know it yet.
Yeah, true.
It just needs time.
Quick update on the mint green GT3, and then let's go to questions.
Ooh, yes.
It just keeps making the round of dealers.
Is it cheap enough for me yet?
No, the price isn't going down. That's a problem. But the funny thing is like every dealer that gets it, I call them. I was like, hey, so you got the famous mint green GT3. What are you talking about? It's like, maybe you should Google the VIN. And then they call me back and they go, oh, like, did you not do this beforehand? So anyway, it was at, I think Porsche of St. Louis, few weeks ago when we did our last episode, and they chose not to retail it based on the information that I provided to them, and then it got wholesaled to RP Exotics, and I called them and my contact over there, and yep, they didn't know about it either.
Oh boy.
How
did that get the approved initials?
Listen, I don't know. It's a killer color. What I don't understand is how anyone looks at this car, because the paintwork is not very good. It's not just like, oh, there's this hidden history. It's like it wasn't repaired well. So anyway, it's now at RP Exotics asking 190 grand with 20,000 miles.
Oh, God.
For a 2018 GT3 manual.
That price seems almost not consensual, like something from RP Exotics would be.
I've had good experiences with them with my dealings, but anyway,
I was just going by the name.
I just don't understand how you can purchase a car.
I'm not going to follow that inference.
Of that, I'm trying to get
this
I'm trying
this
to pull
is a kid
away.
Show.
Yep. You know, I'm just wondering how you purchase a car like that and don't Google the VIN. I feel like all you got to do is Google it, right?
Especially for a GT.
Yes and no. You have to. So, like, the first page, there's been so many listings on dealer sites recently that it's all just those things. So you have to do, like, a little more digging than usual.
Gotcha.
But it's still not hard to find it. So, like, if you – a friend of mine sent it to me because he just Googled mint green GT3, and that's how it came up. So, whatever. Let's get to some questions.
Famous.
We have a few good ones. And if you're watching live, throw those questions in wherever you're watching in the comment flow, and they'll get to us. Magic somehow.
They'll bubble up.
It's how the interwebs work.
Yeah, the internet tubes are. I'm locked in. I'm going to get the questions. All right, Jared Eines or Eanes via Switchcast.live, which if you do not know, Switchcast.live is your home for all things Switchcast. It's the best way to get us a question if you want to chat with mostly Doug. You don't really care about my opinion, but. So yeah, check it out. You can get podcasts as they come out and get in contact with us. So, all right, Jared Eanes, aside from transport brokers, Countach kit car owners, and emission regulations, what is your biggest fear for the automotive future?
Are you going to read his parentheses? Or
Do you want me to read the parentheses
yes.
first? All right. In parentheses,
lest anyone think like I haven't heard these questions already.
Dwindling EV sales, I see, is their nail in the coffin, so EVs can't be your answer unless you have a really good answer involving EVs. Oh, that's an interesting point that I don't think I agree with, but that's fine.
Okay. John, I want to hear your answer because you haven't heard the question.
I have not heard the question.
What is your biggest fear for the automotive future?
My biggest fear for the automotive future is that we lose passion and that we completely and totally take over the market as appliance-like vehicles that are autonomous and absolutely not engaging. That's my fear because at that point, transportation from one place to another becomes too easy and then you have no reason. You would almost have more reason to have a fun car, but if you don't have that gateway drug of accessibility and transport to make you want that other thing, then it's I feel like that's where we lose our young people to be enthusiast automobile drivers.
I need my buzzer to, like, disagree with you there.
Really?
Well, I in theory, I agree. But A to B transportation is always A to B transportation. Yeah. There's very few people that have exciting cars as their daily drivers. So, like, there's always been the place for appliances. And, like, the 90s appliances we only think are cool now because they're 90s. But back then they were appliances.
But also so they were engaging like both and death trappy. Even as daily.
But nobody said this is cool because it's death trappy because they didn't know any better.
Yeah. But you had fun in it. And it's because you were doing things in it.
People have fun in Teslas.
Yeah, but now you're going to have fun watching YouTube. It's different than sliding around on a country road. Well, but
that's a problem
road.
With screens and texting, not oh, with sure. the cars. The cars, you could say that the cars have all gotten way, way, way better.
Oh, for sure.
A brand new appliance, Toyota Camry, is far better in terms of performance than a Ferrari was in the 80s.
Oh, I agree.
So the passion the comes from what we
part
choose
is what I'm talking about.
The autonomous yeah. part. Okay.
That's what I'm right. saying. If we go to a thing where you get on an app and you call up your Uber and a podless, manless person thing comes up and you just get in it and then you're sitting there watching YouTube and then you get out and you've arrived. That's where I'm nervous about that. The autonomy is
gotcha.
What I was saying.
Everybody, this is a shameless plug yet again for the book Why We Drive by Matthew Crawford. Okay, go buy it. Tyler?
I agree with a lot of what John said. I think what the fear has been realized in that we have absolutely passed peak ICE automobile. The era of...
I don't think that happened.
You don't?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so if you're spending
we
like
turbos.
Five, that's what it's like. We have.
I think we're gonna have a resurgence. Let's go on.
All of
you need to talk into the mic, John.
Yeah, you're like
you're
7
like
miles
these,
away.
These little side conversations.
I think
dude.
We need
we're
to
talking
have,
to them.
We're gonna have a resurgence.
I hope we do, but I genuinely think that there's so much, and now I'm biased because I grew up in this time about 2000 to 2010, and around 90s, 80s, all yeah. that will literally never happen again. So much of what I enjoy about cars. It is not in a modern car. There's all these stupid screens. There's all of these like things that get in the way of you actually controlling the vehicle. Talking about in Why We Drive, like the author just rails against all of the, for the most part, a lot of these assistant features aside from airbags and seatbelts that actually keep us safe because they interfere with our control of the vehicle yeah. and they make us less good. So maybe my real answer is that people are just going to keep getting worse at driving because of all of those things. But also the passing of peak ICE vehicle that I think has happened is just depressing for me.
But
people
on the other
are
side,
getting worse at driving. That's a fact.
But the other side of that sword is that then we're going to push more autonomy.
Because people are getting worse
because
at driving.
They're getting
yes.
worse
and
at driving, which is
it's
only going
vicious
to be a
cycle.
Vicious cycle.
Yes.
And that's
yep.
that's my fear.
Yeah. Have you read Why We Drive yet?
It's a wonderful book that I just heard about.
That's a yes or no answer.
Ago. No.
No. Okay.
I need to, though.
I've got it. I'm almost done with my copy. You
verbose
can borrow it if
John
you don't
over
buy it.
Here.
It's a good book. He rambles a bit in the middle, which I'm not a huge fan of, but
like John,
most of
like
his
me.
Point. Yeah, actually, you might be. You're going to be right.
I'm going to love
gonna
it.
Buds.
So it's conversational and light is what you're saying and wonderful. Yeah.
We like making fun of the new guy here. All right. Ready for my answer?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You've all been waiting with bated breath. Insurance. Insurance is my answer. So, like, there's two sides of this, like, death of the automobile, right? There's the grand conspiracy versus just, okay, there's kids and they don't care anymore. They don't drive sticks, whatever. Which you can make the argument that more and more kids are doing karting at 4 years old.
Yeah.
And there's a potential for this resurgence of care about cars and driving. But then there's the other side of things, which is the conspiracy theory, which, what do they say? It's only a conspiracy theory if it's not true. Yeah. I think it gets tied in. I don't want to go too much into politics, but I think it gets tied in slightly into like the class warfare thing, right? So insurance settlements are at a record high. Insurance companies are going bankrupt left and right. A lot of that is, you know, insurance companies like the hurricanes and floods that are happening in Florida. But the lack of tort reform is killing the middle and upper class and insurance companies, right? So the cost for consumers based on ridiculous settlements is going through the roof. And I'm hearing just anecdotally from people with high-end cars that it's getting more and more difficult to get properly insured for them, and insurance companies are just refusing coverage. And I'm hearing from insurance agents that, like, insurance companies are just declining to do certain types of coverage. So the marketplace is shrinking and shrinking, and as a result, the costs are going through the roof. And I think it's only the beginning of that awful snowball, to where the somewhat successful people that have great cars are going to be punished hugely with big settlements and therefore insurance rates. And then they're going to become a class that can't be insured, right? So if the government can't outlaw old cars through emissions regulations or whatever, they're going to make it happen by making people hate the people that have these cars. I mean, we already see it. Like, the joke is, like, you drive a Lamborghini, you get spit on your car key, but you drive a Miata and everyone's like, oh yeah, cool car, a Jeep or whatever.
Yeah.
Or like an old 80s car. People think it's cool.
Or C5.
So I think that kind of conspiracy theory is going to play out in a way that makes stuff really unattainable, except for the people that are just filthy rich, and it's going to kill the enthusiast car community, like, the middle from class. The inside.
Yeah,
because we just can't afford to get insurance, or insurance companies won't insure.
Or they'll just refuse.
Like, yeah. I'm looking at losing a big portion of our insurance for our business because of just they don't want to cover a certain type of thing. So we have to start shopping all over again. It's already extremely hard to find insurance. And, you know, I think that's going to play out in a really bad way. So don't mean to be a downer, but, like, that's the way I see things going. And I think that's going to kill it. I don't think they need to put regulations in. It's just going to kill it naturally.
And then we'll all be so sad that we're going to get on our app and call that Uber. That driverless Uber.
Mm-hmm. You really like these pod taxis with no people in them.
That's what it's coming to. Just telling you. Pittsburgh's already doing it. They're already doing it in Uber.
Yeah. Pittsburgh.
With those hills?
In Pittsburgh.
That's dangerous.
Yes.
Uber literally took all of the money. Uber is the largest taxi company without any overhead because they have no taxi. And they put all taxis. They don't own anything.
It's that tech VC BS.
So then they physically put all of their stuff back looking into automation. So they had a fleet of Volvos in Pittsburgh that were completely autonomous Uber drivers. So hilarious that they took their opportunity came from the people that were giving their cars to company, and now they're going to outlaw them.
Alrighty, on to the next question. This is from Aaron Friedman, also from switchcast.live. I'm looking for advice on what my next car may be, but not right away. I have a 5-year-old.
Wait, he doesn't want the car right away or the advice right away?
Or the child.
I think the car. You don't. Can we mute him for a second? I have a 5-year-old Hyundai Kona, 3-year lease when I then bought outright, that is frugal and reliable. I work hard, save money, and spend rationally. I love driving.
Sounds like he's frugal, not the car.
Yeah.
Correct. I love driving, but have responsibly only driven low horsepower cars after getting a fair number of speeding tickets and a family hand-me-down Subaru Impreza WRX Turbo from the early 2000s. Sounds like you had
a
good time.
That's not responsible.
Yeah.
I'm 35 years old.
There's no responsible WRX.
Have a home mortgage and save for home updates, repairs, and potential emergencies. I love road trips. Take them for as long as often as I can. In your opinion, what car should I next save to own?
Oh, it's a. I'm sorry. I thought this was like a singles ad. You know, I love road trips and I go off and
it really kind of veered into that.
It did.
It's all guys here. Just I do not drive a manual, but I. But I did learn
it's
when I
Subaru.
Was a Doug, let me read the question. But I did learn when I was a teenager. It doesn't drive manual. Did learn. Is a used manual porch. Winky face. Something I truly need in my life, or maybe a depreciated V12 or V10. You're not frugal if you're looking after that.
That's going the opposite.
I'm thinking it has to be a GT car because my body feels older than it looks. Same. So I think the question
maybe
is,
you should
what
ask
should
your
they
friends.
Buy next?
You might look older than you think.
So I guess for somebody who doesn't really drive a manual, likes to take a lot of road trips, is relatively frugal, it seems. What is a GT, a fun GT car that they could drive?
Why don't you answer?
Telling me secrets over here. Talk into the mic, John. Answer the question.
I didn't want to interrupt him, but I was trying to get you.
Interrupt him all the time. I'm interrupting you right now.
He's coming.
Hey, I got a good knock-knock joke for you. Knock-knock.
Come on and keep talking.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Interrupting cow.
Oh, okay. So, come full circle. What is your opinion on this? What is your opinion of a great GT car that gets good gas mileage, that's extremely cheap and reliable and cheap to operate and, you know, all that stuff? It has a good modern performance portfolio. I'm just curious.
It is a Corvette C5. That is what you want, Aaron.
And we win.
Ding, it's a Corvette ding, C5. Ding,
ding. Is a Corvette a GT car, though? Or is it a sports car?
No, it's absolutely a GT car.
The amount of storage space, Doug.
It's a GT car because of the ease of which you can do things. And a C5 particularly, a little bit less on the convertible. I'm so sorry, a little bit less on the convertible. But not bad enough to take it out, though.
Listen, he said his body feels older than it looks. I've seen the driver's seat bolsters on Corvettes owned by people that are AARP members. They are screwed. That is not easy to get in and out of. I think a GT car has to be like a BMW M6 Grand Coupe or something like that.
Yeah, but that's going to be so much to maintain.
He's going to mechanically salvage himself.
He said a depreciated V12 or V10. The frugal, reliable thing is in his past.
Oh, so now we're going, well, in that case, you know.
Get a Viper.
It sounds like he's having a midlife crisis, honestly.
That's like a third life crisis.
I mean, that's why I bought mine, but.
A 35?
I'm only 30.
If you have a second life crisis, is that when your game crashes?
A one-third.
You said one-third, not a third. Okay.
A single third.
Okay.
Not a mid. Half.
As opposed to a half-life crisis.
Half-life.
Which is scientific.
What is your answer?
Technically, everything's in the middle. Anything from toddler to, nursing home is in the middle.
We're talking about, the half-life of, different...
Yeah.
You work in science.
Nuclear medicine. I get it.
Yeah.
Radioactive. My license plates, literally, I radiate them. So that joke landed for me. I'm sorry if it didn't land out there, guys.
We should probably answer the question. Well, you did. Corvette C5. Aston Martin DB9.
We didn't get a budget, and that's I'm well within constraints, I think. But I love...
He owned a Subaru Impreza WRX Turbo. He has an unlimited budget.
No. He got a hand-me-down Subaru WRX Turbo. So that
he has an unlimited budget.
Unlimited budget? Okay.
For maintenance.
For maintenance, yeah, true, because it's used to.
Oh, he is. He's 35 years old. Okay.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking. I don't know. I think both
it
of those answers
a
are great.
Crisis.
I do think a 911 would be good too.
A 911 would be good.
I think that the black 997 you got out here would be a phenomenal car for that. And it's sportier than GT. However, I think from a GT standpoint, it checks all the boxes. Plus, if I don't know, were the kids mentioned?
Yes, there's a child.
They can fit the kids in there. There's no excuses. It's a relatively asterisk-free car.
The problem is we've answered almost every question on this podcast with Corvette or Porsche 911. So I feel like he wants a different answer. So get a Lotus Carlton. Okay, next question.
Related, I think, because we talked about Porsche, this is a question from the live chat on YouTube. One door... Or 1DRWND.Porsche. Question for Doug. So not you and I, John.
Oh, we suck.
Current opinion on the non-GT 996?
Well, I have amazing opinion on this. I'm not allowed to talk about it, though.
Sorry.
Can you replicate my voice?
Yeah.
Well, they're on YouTube. They're watching.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
it won't work. The non-GT... Why? Tyler owns one. He's owned one for a long time. You're not asking him.
Well, nobody cares about my opinion. Nobody cares. That's a...
Well, if you can get over the fried egg headlights and the IMS bearing and the bore scoring, then they're great cars.
No, so just drive it.
I like them. I think they're a fantastic car for the value. Well, they're not really a value anymore. They're almost 997 prices.
They're appreciating.
They're a little bit cheapy on the interior. They're not like the typical German like thunk when you close the door.
Until you get into a C5 and then it's suddenly like a bank vault.
Yes, that's true. I said German. I didn't say American. No. Relative to what you're expecting, the 996 was kind of the cheaper one. And, you know, they cheaped out on the cylinder lining, too. But, no, I think they're fun cars. I think they look good. I don't have any problem with the headlight design. I would get a later generation one for, like, the better interior. Oh. Then again, people will tell you get the 98s with the amber turn signals, and those were the ones made in Germany and blah, blah, blah. The early ones you could get with LSD, and they didn't come with a side of drugs. It was a limited slip differential.
I've had LSD in a 911.
Okay, next question. We're coming up.
The limited slip differential, not the drugs, guys.
Uh-huh.
We're going sideways. Literally.
You have put us here.
No, the little bit slip.
I get the joke.
Drifting.
We don't have the ba-dum-tsh up here.
There's a question that has come from YouTube. Has anyone beaten the pre-pandemic record post-pandemic, but didn't receive the recognition because of the pandemic record? Seems like it really should be a notable record, but not the record. Oh, God. We have one of these discussions.
No.
If the OG was concerned about safety, a record made during years when roads were emptier and arguably safer only encourages people to be less safe to try to attain it. Your thoughts.
There's endless discussion about, like, oh, records don't count during 2020 because they have an asterisk, whatever. Okay, so we've kind of beat the subject to death, so I'm not going to get into the philosophical discussion about that. I'm just going to answer the original question. Has anyone beaten the pre-2020 Cannonball record after 2020? The easy answer to that is nobody has gone even sub-30 hours from New York to L.A. after 2020. And it has nothing to do with COVID. It's just like that's how hard it is to go sub 30 hours. There was this period of time where it was a lot easier, but also there were a lot of people that were already prepped to go, like highly prepped teams. So it's kind of a perfect storm that maybe didn't accurately reflect the situation. But prior to 2020, there was only 3 runs faster than 30 hours. And there have been none since 2020. During 2020, there was 6 or 7.
It was a lot.
There's a lot. So there was definitely an advantage there.
So there's an opportunity for a car to lead the pace and get under 30 hours with yellow stripes.
Are you trying to make another Corvette pace car joke, John?
I think he is.
We should combine both of these things.
I think we've got a question that I think John really can answer best, though. This is from Devin Ruckus here in the YouTube chat. For cars or the stars, would you recommend the regular admission or private collection tour?
They're different.
They are mutually exclusive. They are not by one or the other. You got to get the spectator ticket to come to the cars or the stars because the entire downtown is going to be blocked off. Then also we're going to an exclusive super, super, uber duper private, super crazy collection on Sunday. It's like 220 cars. Absolutely crazy. We're not allowed to have cell phones. You're not allowed to be talking about it. You know, it's like kind of like Fight Club, but with cars. So it's super exclusive. There are only, I think, 6 tickets left, 4 tickets left, something like that. I'll have to look. But yeah, so both is always the answer. And especially this time.
It's a good thing I didn't start a drinking game for every time you said super at the beginning of the answer to this question, super. Because this podcast would be over for me. Yeah, no, both and. Buy everything, buy all of them, come to the auction, come to the whatever. Yeah.
And also buy the, there's 2 VIP all-access tickets for the whole weekend. You get to hang out with these guys all all weekend long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alrighty, Ethan is over there on the Instagrams, and he's interacting with the people. I think we have some questions.
Yeah, did we want to allocate some time of this to the Instagram questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is a Q&A, producer
we'll,
Ethan.
We'll push the wall of shame to next month.
All right.
The next episode.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Don't worry about it.
So a lot of these are going to be pretty quick hitters here, so I think we can fire through these and get to the real heart of this Q&A.
All right.
I don't want to do that one. What
Great, that was easy. All right, on to the next segment.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
True.
What do you guys think about the classic Saab 900?
Yes.
Hot.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yep.
And
love it. Turbo? Yeah.
I was going to say turbo.
I had
for
a
the
turbo
win.
5-speed one of those.
They make good noises.
And a 9000.
Approve.
All right, good.
Porsche 944, by the way, is the exact same starter noise as that era Saab.
Ah.
That is true.
Have you ever noticed that?
That is true.
You start up a Porsche 944, you close your eyes. I'm in a 90s Saab.
No kidding. Wow.
That's hilarious.
Thoughts on a base 981 Cayman?
Yes.
981 still had flat six, right?
Yes.
Approve.
Yes. 2013 to 2017. 16 or 17. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Flat six, best generation of Cayman they ever made. Mid-engine platform. Arguably better than a 981, than a 911. I think those are amazing values for the money. One of the best just like daily driver sports cars out there that you could buy. Maybe that's an answer to the guy earlier who was talking about a GT car to drive. Yeah, go buy a 981 Cayman.
And there's no IMS and there's probably maybe no bore scoring. We'll
probably
see in 10
maybe.
Years.
Yep. Yep.
Best Porsche under 50K.
981 Cayman.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Next.
No, it's good.
Copy paste
good.
For all the reasons.
Ship it. Yeah. Do you guys think
981 Cayman?
There you go. Do you guys think first gen R8s will start to become sought after?
That was on YouTube as well. So thanks for.
That was in there as well.
I mean, they are kind of sought after, at least in a manual and a V10. The V8s are less sought after. The single clutch. Whatever they call
E-gear,
that.
But not.
Yeah, right. That will never be sought after. Probably people are stick swapping them already.
I was going to say, that's somebody has to figure that out already.
Yeah, they're already pretty sought after, but they made a lot of them. And I don't know. They don't have the performance numbers of some of the supercars of that era, but they weren't ever trying to be a supercar. Yeah. So they're not going to be like highly collectible. But...
Did we have more thoughts on that? Or
981
Cayman.
There you go. What is the next car brand you think will dissolve? RIP Saturn.
Oh, now I'm sad.
Is Chrysler still around?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they're next. Fiat Chrysler America.
Nah, they're what? They make like two... They make one... Don't they just make a minivan now? They
make so many cars.
Well, but
it's
like
a,
Chrysler
it's a parent
itself.
Company.
Yeah. It's Stellantis. Mm. They'll be here forever.
Going through a lot of restructuring right now. They are not doing very well.
Yeah, but I think they'll always be around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What is the next car company to dissolve? Mitsubishi. They're already like...
Do they still make cars?
Dude, we could probably get a franchise right now.
I am shocked that they didn't dissolve yet, especially after that Eclipse debacle. That's just bad.
What happened during the solar eclipse?
Well, there were no Mitsubishis sold.
On that day.
Yeah, on that day.
Oh. Well, that tracks.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, so the reason I say that, right? So Mitsubishi in Cleveland, it used to be on the Bedford Auto Mile. It was Rick Case Mitsubishi. Rick Case is a legendary local car dealer that moved to Florida like they all do. And now, like, you drive down the less desirable area of Oakwood where the allegedly shady-appearing used car dealers are, and one of them just like has the Mitsubishi franchise. I was like, oh.
So oh, I didn't
anybody know that. Can get one now.
Let's do that.
No. No, I read something about how Mitsubishi is kind of like Quiznos. The way they run their franchises is so bad that like the franchisees can't make any money.
Oh, yeah.
So nobody wants the franchise.
We did have a question earlier. Joe B. in the YouTube chat did ask, I'm sorry I missed this, what is the Mint GT3 lore? I guess they haven't been around, so is there an abridged version?
Oh, my gosh.
Version?
Go 18 different episodes we did about this. Long story short, it was owned by some guy in California who went crazy and dropped it off at a shop to do a wide body conversion. I guess didn't pay them. It got repossessed by Porsche Financial Services while it was at the body shop, and they had like started the wide body conversion. So they had cut the fenders, welded and bondoed on these wide body fenders, but not finished them, removed the seats. And it looked like somebody was living out of the car. Maybe they were. And that's how it got repoed to Porsche Financial and went through auction. Then it went through a bunch of dealers and got sort of cleaned up and then sold sort of as a Porsche certified pre-owned, but by a non-Porsche dealer. So they just like put a Porsche CPO frame and plate on it.
And that.
Then it just kept going through auction and all to these different dealers. And, you know, I got threats from all these people for calling it out. And, you know.
You never had it, though.
No, I never had it. I just found it. Yeah. I was like, how do these people not know? Oh, wait, they do know about it. They're just being shady used car dealers and not telling anybody because they're trying to profit off of the information disparity. So it just keeps moving and moving and moving and moving.
Wonder if they'd trade a maroon 456 for it.
I would trade straight up for my million mile terrible Ferrari 456 for the mint green GT3.
There you go.
Offers extended. On the table.
What else we got from Instagram over there, Ethan?
Yeah, we can keep going here if we want
yeah,
to.
Yeah, why not?
Sure.
You're looking at that question, if you enjoy this podcast, please help us out with the algorithms. If you like, subscribe, share, review, etc. Smash that like button. It all helps us with the algorithms wherever you are listening. So, thank you.
So, have you guys caught wind of Hyundai hiring a Porsche engineer as the VP of performance for Genesis?
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay.
But I like it.
Why?
Yeah. It's a Porsche engineer, and I like Genesis also.
I was going to say, Genesis does good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. They put out some great music. I didn't even know they were still around.
It's a journey. To find their stuff.
Shut it down, Ethan.
All right, moving on. Hey, Doug, why do you think the big tank strategy in Cannonball has not been successful?
Dude, they've been using larger gas tanks since 1903. Like, literally, some of the first people ever to use it used extended-range gas tanks. We recently found a 1968 BMW R69S, which Tibor Serossi used to set the transcontinental record in 1969 on a motorcycle, and it had this giant fuel tank on it that no other BMW R69 I've ever seen has had. And I talked to the guy. He's like, yeah, no, this is like what Serossi used because he needed extra fuel. That's what everybody does. That's what we did. We've all the modern records have had fuel cells in the trunk. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
All right, yeah, Church of Petrol, successful. If you want to clarify that and explain why you feel
if you
it's
want
not
to clarify
successful.
Why you feel that maybe you're he was right saying, when you're wrong.
Maybe he was saying like yeah, no, the big tank messing. To get one nonstop.
That's
maybe,
what I'm
assuming.
That's what I'm
that's
assuming
probably
the question
okay.
means.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So that's always a like internet discussion, right? Like mobile refueling, no stops, whatever. You can cut hours off your time. So I go back to our 2019 run. We had 4 fuel stops and 22 minutes total stopped in 2,800 miles
that's
across
awesome.
The country. 22 minutes total stopped, which tells you that the answer to breaking the Cannonball record is not less time stopped or zero time stopped. It's going faster. Because 22 minutes stopped is almost nothing when you factor in traffic lights and driver changes and anything else. So typically the people who are doing it nonstop have to balance the efficiency and gas mileage with the speed. So they're not going for outright records. They're not trying to go for outright records. It's not a strategy to beat the record. It's essentially like it's almost a handicap or like a different category of like I'm going for this record to do something interesting and notable in that I did it nonstop. It's never been a actual strategy among cannonballers to try to do it nonstop. It's only been something that people discuss on Reddit.
Well, the other thing is you have your stock tank and your giant tank and you filled four stops.
Yeah.
So to do that, you wouldn't physically, geographically, you wouldn't have enough space.
Well, yeah. So that was 60 gallons.
Yeah.
Right? So 60 times 5, because you have 4 stops, but you start with a full tank, right? So that's 300 gallons.
put 300 gallons in any car and try to drive at all.
At all. Yeah. I mean, it's literally that's no. 8 pounds. I mean.
Yeah. 7-8 pounds per. So what's 7, 8 times 3?
2400. We're doing math.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the weight of a car in your car in fuel. You want to go around a corner?
Yeah.
Nah.
Not straight.
Joe B on YouTube had another good question. Doug, how would you explain the AIV Roadster handling?
Tyler, you drove one to Columbus and back. You should answer that question. For those of you who aren't super car nerds, the Panos AIV Roadster is an American obscure company that made cars in the late 90s and early 2000s. It was a modular chassis with Ford components in it. It was an open wheel, like exposed suspension car that had interesting handling characteristics.
Well, considering your rear end is like on the rear axle, you are about as far back as you can be. It's a very bizarre. You have like so much hood. It's really cool to see the wheels turning in front of you. Most of what I remember is all of the wind hitting my face for 2.5 hours, though. There's not much handling when you're going straight in 70 and getting buffeted to death. But around roundabouts and stuff, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's good, but there's a lot of body roll. It's not super predictable, right? It's a pretty short wheelbase car, very light. There's no downforce. I don't think it would make a good track car at all. The biggest thing that I didn't like is the steering angle is limited. They use a Cobra steering rack, but they put like
blocks
in there to limit the steering angle because of the suspension design. So you can't like do a drift circle. Because you can't get enough opposite steering angle.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
They look so cool, though.
Yeah.
Is it improvable? Like, is it?
I don't know. I mean, I guess you could do a wider track.
Like, okay.
And then you can get full angle, and then you have maybe a little bit more predictable handling.
Hmm.
But, yeah, it feels like it'll kind of bite your head off if you try to push it past the limit.
And just don't drive it on the highway. Every truck I went past, I was like,
Well, why were you in the left lane?
I was trying to pass the truck. I was terrified. I was a little bug that they were going to squash.
Well, that puts us up against our time limit. We do have more, and we will be back, but not this month. We are taking about a month hiatus before season 5. We will be back for season 5, we promise. So we thank you for your loyalty here, and we look forward to seeing you shortly. So the props and flops brought to you by Switch Cars.
And Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, consign, service, and store only cars that we like ourselves. Just kidding. We'll store any cars except EVs. Anyway.
No Teslas.
Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. Find more information at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio. Our pick of the week from Switch Cars Inventory is what, Doug?
What is it, John?
Well,
speaking of mint green,
is it a C5 Corvette?
It's a beautiful mint green. Is that officially? Is it officially?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful mint green 993. There's a lot of cool cars here today, guys, and that was the only one I took a picture of. So
it's so good.
It's essentially like a 993 RS tribute.
Tribute.
Not fully accurate, but a lot of OEM parts on it. A wonderful, wonderful build. A lot of money spent on it. More money spent on the build than you can buy the entire car for. That's how things go. Our flop of the week, Recaro, the beloved seat manufacturer, has filed bankruptcy. Now, we've celebrated a few bankruptcies on here of companies that we thought deserve to file bankruptcy, but you know, we don't celebrate everybody's downfall. We love Recaro. They make awesome seats. But we don't have a whole lot of details on why or what their numbers are. That information has not been published, but I guess they just owe more money than they have. So they have been an interesting thing to note is they were bought by a private investment company back in 2020.
Hmm. Womp womp.
So, you know, sometimes those things go really well, and sometimes those companies try to
essentially apply the growth at all costs model and end up doing more harm than good. So that's a possibility.
Or extract cash and then bankrupt them.
Yep, that could be the case as well. That could be the case as well. They are they have been approved by the German courts, though, for a what do they call this? A self-administration. So in America, we have like the Chapter 7, Chapter 11, Chapter 13, which is a different type of bankruptcy. Some of it is just like, we're out of money, we're done, sell off the assets, pay the investors, and close the company. Other ones are restructuring. So according to Schultz and Braun, this is some information on the insolvency proceedings in self-administration. And essentially, the management of the company can have all the power of disposal over the company's assets during this reorganization. And they don't have an administrator. They have a supervisor who ensures compliance with the rules, but it seems fairly autonomous by the company to be able to just do what they think is right in order to, as long as they're following the rules of this bankruptcy filing, to do what they need to do to restructure the company. So it it sounds like they're just restructuring debt, trying to continue as normal and, you know, continue on with the company. But we don't have a lot of details like that. But it doesn't seem that they're just like shutting down. A lot of people hear bankruptcy and they're like, oh, my gosh, they're dead. It's not how it works.
So fingers crossed. Good vibes for Recaro. Please do not die.
Yes. I'm very curious, though. I follow the Euro Recaro 996 GT3 Porsche seats on Bring a Trailer typically, because that like helps me track the market of the Porsches in general. That's one of my metrics. So I'm curious how this is going to skew things. Like, people are going to start buying up
every Recaro branded anything.
Right.
Just as long as the cars don't get much more expensive. Let's keep those somewhat reasonable for the next few months, shall we?
Tyler would like to trade his Corvette Pace car for 996 yes. GT3. Yes.
Also an offer on the table.
Yeah.
Prop of the week. Pagani Utopia Roadster. Yes. Oh, it's amazing. It's a bi-turbo V12, 864 horsepower, 6-liter Mercedes V12, a manual gearbox, and they kept the weight down. Typically, when you make a coupe into a convertible, it like makes it extremely heavy and not as good handling. But this car was designed with a carbon titanium monocoque weighing in at just over 2,800 pounds.
Amazing.
Out the door, which is like half the weight of the new BMW M5's front kidney grills. Huh. Speaking of front grills, though, the Pagani Utopia, it is a butterface. It from the front, those it looks like there's two frogs looking out of the headlights. It's a little goofy.
So
looking.
Here's the thing. I don't, you know, you talk about reusing stuff. I don't think I've reused this with you yet, but I would call that an Uma Thurman, because it's like, oh, that girl's not that pretty. But then you look at her again, you're like, she's kind of pretty. And you look at her again, you're like, okay, yeah. She's actually hot. So that's an Uma Thurman, in my opinion.
All right. I think it is a timely name, though, with the Utopia, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's offsetting the other direction we're going with the 7,000-pound Tesla Cybertruck, which should have been named Dystopia, right?
Yes, two
different futures. So I think it's a timely name.
If you could get one of these dug in light carmine red, would you be on the...
Well, all the press photos are exposed red burgundy carbon fiber, so it is pretty awesome.
Hot.
It is pretty awesome.
And if any of you out in YouTube world have one, or any of the places is this broadcast, and if you want to bring it to Minerva, I will comp your ticket. I'm just saying.
Yes, and we'll park it backwards so we don't have to look at those headlights. But the price, $3.5 million, give or take.
Ugh.
$3.5 million, and they're building 130 of them.
And they're probably all sold out already.
Probably, but honestly, this is a great business model, right? So Pagani's been using a similar AMG engine for the better part of two decades, and they'll get close to $500 million in revenue off of this one model.
And they get to make incredible automobiles.
Right. Di Tommaso investors, try not to cry in your milk. Your day might come.
I hope that comes.
I do too.
I wish that I comes do to fruition.
Too. I do too. But man, Pagani is knocking it out of the park. Golly, 400 some odd million dollars from one model.
Whew.
That's
from a limited run of one
good
model.
Good for them. Yes.
That's
good for them. Well, our time is gone. Thank you to my co-host, Tyler Sanders, and special guest, John Dunlap, tonight. Thank you to our sponsors, Boxcast, Nux for starting over. Switch Cars and Celebrity Machines. Thank you to our producer extraordinaire, Ethan Huffnagel. Our bumper music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. This episode will be available next Monday in audio format wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening, and we will see you for season 5 as we look forward to edifying, educating, and entertaining you on the drive of your life.